the two things I wanted to talk about here. I'm ashamed of school.
What picture
are they? Page. Lamb of David. There's a difficult Rashi which I never understood, but he explains it. Rashi says, you know, that there are 22 Hebrew letters in the Hebrew alphabet. According to the Kabbalah, these letters have within them the power of creation. So, the way the Kabbalah explains creation is that God created the letters of the Hebrew alphabet, and then he used these letters to create the world. So combinations of the letters create the world. I don't know exactly what that means, but that's the concept. So, which of the 22 letters is the main letter in the creation of the world? So Rashi, the great commentary, says it's the letter He, the fifth letter. Now, the He happens to be in God's main name, the main name of Hashem, and the Torah has four letters, and the He appears twice. So Yud He, and then above, and another He. So it seems that the letter He is certainly it comes up more than any other letter in God's name. Twice. Yeah.
The letter He is for Olam Hazeh.
Right. Yeah, and then Rashi says either God used He, but there was also a Yud. Yud and a He.
Where does Rashi say this?
And right in the beginning of Rashi's, and second in Rashi's Bereishis.
Okay.
He quotes the Pasuk, Ki Bi Yah Hashem Tzur Lamin. With the letters Yud Hey, God created the world. But Rashi says that the main letter was the Hey. Right, because the letter Hey, as Matan pointed out, the letter Hey, according to Kabbalah, represents this world. In other words, the four letters of God's name, the Yud Hey, and then the above and the Hey. The Yud, which is the first letter, is God Himself. It's without anything else. It's the original way it was. Before God created anything, it was only God. That's the first Yud. And then it works its way down, the four letters. Pick the final letter, which is the last He. That letter He is the reality of this world. And so he's starting from God and winding up in this world, there's a long distance to travel in between.
The five worlds or something?
There are four worlds. There's four basic universes that God created. The first is God Himself, or just God, let's say a God that we can comprehend. There's the level of God which is way beyond comprehension, that is even beyond letters. Then there's the first level of the four letters. The first Yud, the Yud is a dot, it's the tiniest Jewish letter, it's a dot. The dot, it means the infinitesimal, the smallest beginning of understanding of something. Which, in other words, God Himself. We have some concept of God Himself, being completely alone. It doesn't depend on creation. So that concept is the first thing in the four letters. Then you start working your way down into things which become more and more real in our conceptualization. There's the first He, and then there's the above, and there's the final He. The final He is the reality which we see in this world. So that's why Matan is right. It says God created this world with a He. Now, he says something here. He says like this from, the, I guess, one of his great teachers that had a great influence on him was the Rebbe from Alexander. So the Rebbe from Alexander said like this, the Hebrew word for nature, this world is called the natural world. We call this nature. The Hebrew word for nature is teva. Tes beis ayin. Teva is the Hebrew word for nature. Teva has a lot of different meanings in Hebrew. One of the meanings of teva is nature. So he said you could take another meaning of the word teva, and that is the tevia, the deboa, means to drown. It also means to drown. Someone drowns in a, God forbid, in an ocean, and it's called a tava. So, same letters, test base, I just a different vowelization. So, but this, those three letters, teva, means nature. It's pronounced a little differently. It means to drown. So he says like this, he says, really, it's not a coincidence that the same word in Hebrew has two meanings, nature and to drown. Because really, nature, which is another way of saying this world, person can drown a person spiritually. You can drown in the way this world, in the reality of this world, and you can become so involved in the physicality and the of this world, so you drown in it. You spiritually drown. We more probably, more than any other generation, can testify to this phenomenon. Living in New York City, in Manhattan, that part of New York City, you can completely drown and you can completely get engulfed by the material side of the world, and lose all sense of spiritualism, spirituality, and drown in the materialism, which is what's basically, from our point of view, that's a fundamental problem of this society. And I think that this is also what, in a good way, bothers the Muslims about the West, that the West, by abandoning Christianity in the last couple hundred years, has lost its spiritual side, and just as in materialism, it's denying the spiritual side of man, of the world, of life. So it's drowned in materialism. So it's an interesting point. So the nature has a power to make people drown in it. Drowning means that they lose their spirituality. So how is it possible for a person to survive such an environment? He has to go above nature. In order for us to maintain our spirituality and then go for the natural materialism all around us, we have to go above nature. We have to do superhuman efforts. That's what he says. That's what the Alexander Rebbe said. We have to go do superhuman efforts. We have to go beyond nature. So, if someone's living in Manhattan, I'll tell you, for example, I think about it tonight. Tonight's the seventh game of the playoffs in the Mets and the Cardinals. Now, I'm a New York City resident my whole life. New York City's been waiting, I don't know how many years, for the Mets to finally get to the World Series. So, a little bit I follow it. So, nature, the culture which I'm living in, was a very powerful push tonight to turn on the radio, listen to the game, or even go into the dormitory, watch the game, or part of the game.
So nature is materialism.
Right. Physical material. So was after we have to say no. So but I was able to do it tonight. Did not turn. I was very lucky. I didn't have any radio in my car because it was broken. And in my house, I prepared the shiur, so I didn't have time to listen. And so I don't know. I know. I walked by when I parked my car. I saw a little store there. I saw all the men are glued, looking like this, looking up at something. So there must be a game going on. So there's like a, you have to be a superhuman. You have to do something against the natural way of living. The natural way of living, in this case, in New York City tonight, would be if you're a New York City resident, you would turn on the television or watch. You know, this. You have to go against nature, against the culture. This we religious Jews do this all the time. We do it so often that we even consider it natural what they're doing, but it's very unnatural. Let's say eating kosher food. For a non-Jew, it's a very unnatural thing. It's not natural. It is natural as you eat everything you want to eat. No, we have dietary laws. You can only eat this, that. We're not saying it's because of health reasons. God said, eat this, don't eat that. So I only eat kosher fish, I won't eat lobster. Can't explain it, it's an unnatural thing. We do it, we Orthodox Jews do it so much, we consider it natural. Because going against the culture, doing supernatural things for us is natural. Or, you know, there's so many different things which are unnatural about the Torah Jewish life. The fact that we sit and study the same book for books for thousands of years is very unnatural. How many people in the world are studying Platonic, Aristotelian philosophy today?
Only professors.
Only professors. I mean, they're one student or two students that they have in their class. Here, we have millions of Jews. Keep on studying the books of the Talmud, the old books. Again, my children will do it, and my grandchildren, and my father, and my grandfather. We're studying the same books. So again, it's an unnatural way, but we consider it so, we do it so much that we consider it natural. But really, it's against the Torah. It's against the nature. It's against the nature of our regular culture. So people are reading the same book. Thousands of years. Also, my rabbi, Rabbi Wolfson, made a very interesting point that this is the only book in any culture which is studied by people of all ages. So you start studying it when you're 6 years old and you go on until you're 120 years old. It's that same book. It's like the Chumash, the Bible. Say, 6 year old, you're studying the Bible, and 20-year-old and 50-year-old and 90-year-old, some book. You wouldn't do that in any other course. In economics, you wouldn't have a high school elementary student read the same book as a graduate student. Right.
Even Muslims, they read the Quran. I always get the sense
they
that
read
Muslims
the Quran,
are reading the
yeah,
Quran, like,
read the
because there's so many different ways of reading the Quran.
Maybe they read the Quran like we read the Bible. Well, you know, it's a takeoff on the Bible. It's
Right, Christians also read the New
Christians
Testament.
Read the New Testament the same way. It's all a takeoff. Judaism was one
it's
that created the concept
study,
of studying the sacred texts over and over and over again, and other religions took their cue from us. These are daughter religions, Christianity and Islam. They children of Judaism. So this Jewish thing of studying the sacred text, no matter what age, for their whole life. They picked that up. They made that also through their sacred texts, and they say study that over and over again. But it doesn't apply to other cultures. So it's certainly not true in America. I don't know of any book in America that people. No, when I was young, we used to study the Constitution. But I don't think they study the Constitution anymore in schools. Do they? No. We study the Constitution. It used to be part of a required course in high school in America. We had to study the U.S. Constitution. It was called civics. It was called called it, because obviously
you have to take civics, but you don't study the Constitution.
No. Okay. Because they decided it's too hard. The words are too big. It's too complicated. See, but we don't say that about the Torah. The Torah is very complicated, but we say the next generation has to struggle with it the way that the older generation. So, there's so many different things, if you think about it, that we behave in an unnatural way. Because the only way you can conquer the flood of materialism, which is built into nature, is by going against nature, by behaving unnaturally. You take, for example, Shabbos. Shabbos, for me and you, seems natural, but for most, for everybody else, it's a very unnatural thing. How can you explain to somebody that you will not push an electric button to take an elevator up and down? And you tell a person, the reason is because pushing the electric button is work, as opposed to rest on the Sabbath. So, but instead of pushing the electric button to go up to my apartment on the 15th floor, I climb 15 flights of steps. And I say, this is resting. If I push the button, I'm doing work. And if I walk up the 15 flights of stairs, I'm not doing work. It's an unnatural way of explaining things. We have a total way of explaining it, because of work. It's a very sophisticated concept that work is something creative. When you push the button, you're creating an electric current. So in that sense, it's a productive act. It's a creative act, which we call work, but walking up the steps. So the same steps were before, and the same steps are later. Didn't create anything. It's not called work. That's an unnatural concept of work also. But in any event, it's different. So almost everything that we do in the Torah, in religious life, is against the natural way of living. What people consider natural. And the reason is because we don't want to drown in nature. Because nature can... The word teva, which is nature, also means the tevoa, to drown. A person can drown in nature.
Circumcision is a great example.
Yeah, it's a great example through circumcision. Begin the baby the eighth day with a circumcision. Going against nature. God, nature gave him the piece of skin. He cut it off. The whole idea is that you go lamala, Judaism, the Torah is a system to go connected hateva, lamala minateva, against nature, above nature. Therefore, we can control. By doing this, we become the controllers of nature. Instead of nature controlling us, we control nature. That's why. For Jews, miracles happen. Things happen which are against nature. I've talked about this many times here, how the state of Israel is an unnatural phenomenon. It's against the natural laws of the nations. The natural laws of nations is that such a nation should not exist. Once was a country a few thousand years ago. Since when do we reconstitute countries after 2,000 years? Imagine a bunch of people come together and say, we represent, we're the descendants of the people who lived in the Greek Isles before the Romans conquered it. We want to reconstitute our ancient homeland. We're the descendants of the ancient Spartans. You want to come back and make a new country called Sparta. Who will pay attention to such nonsense? The Iroquois Indians will say, we want to reconstitute the Iroquois nation. Who will pay attention to such things? Only the Jews could say it, and the Jews believe it, and they can convince the world to do it. Let them do it. So you can't argue with the Arabs or other countries and the natural, but it's a problem. a lot of the Jews who want to defend Israel try to argue for Israel using natural arguments. But an unnatural phenomenon cannot be defended by natural arguments. That's why we don't convince anybody with all these arguments. We may convince ourselves, but people are not convinced because the whole phenomenon is unnatural. You should rather say what Rashi says, the first Rashi in the Chumash, he's about the Jews living in Israel, and he says it has, the non-Jews say that the Jews are thieves. And he says we should give them the answer. God created the world, and God decided to give it to us. It's not a very nice answer, in the sense of, you know, it doesn't make people happy. But it's basically saying it's an unnatural event which God did to intervene with the regular rules of nature. The regular rules of nature were that you should not have the land of Israel. But it's God intervened. It's an unnatural way of living. Yeah.
Many things in the Universal Salvation, some of these articles that this comes in very much in favor of saying that we should try to be making Kedusha natural, sort of trying to make, we should have tried to embrace what's natural. And I know he's focused on that theme a lot with man a lot. And,
yeah, his theory is that if you embrace the Torah system, that becomes the nature of the Jewish lifestyle. So it's not against what I'm saying. We're speaking of, but it's based upon normative, natural law, behavior, attitude. Torah Judaism is unnatural.
To the rest of the world.
To the rest of the world. Now that's how the Rejic says, it has to become natural for us. The goal is it should become natural for us, which in many ways it is. A lot of the things that we do, we don't consider crazy or out of ordinary. It's for us, it's natural. Because that's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be. Because in a certain way, in other words, he's also saying that by going with the Torah lifestyle, you then are able to subdue nature, subjugate nature to the Torah way of living, and then it's a new nature. It's a different way of looking at nature. And then nature also responds to our way. In other words, the fact is, we are successful in what we want to do. We are still here after 4,000 years, living basically the same lifestyle as our grandfathers did 4,000 years ago. We're in the same country, Israel, same capital, Jerusalem. So it's unnatural against the regular natural backdrop of how everybody in the world behaves. But because it's with the Torah, it succeeds in nature. It becomes a Jewish way of doing things. So the Jews are an anomaly to everybody else in the world. They can't figure us out. Because we want to do things which are unnatural, and we are successfully doing it, continuously successfully doing it. Things which people wouldn't dream of doing, whether it's communist movement, or the socialist movement, or the liberal movement, or the human rights movement in America, civil rights, all Jewish driven. These are unnatural things. And the Jews said, you know what? We can change. We can stop all this things that were going on during the industrialization of the world with all the capitalists, the Rockefellers and these other, whoever it was, taking advantage of the poor, and the workers had no rights, and child labor was going on, and all these things. And Jews said, no, not right, it's not fair, these children are being exploited, etc., etc. So at that time it sounded crazy. Now, 100, 200 years later, after all of this, it's become already natural for the non-Jew also, that workers have rights and children don't have to work. These are all Jewish concepts, driven by Jews. Civil rights, equality, all of these things. So, in many times, the Jews, at least in recent history, the last couple of hundred years, the Jews were able to export our supernatural or anti-natural way of living to the rest of the world, that they also begin to live this way. And the difference between us and the Muslims is the Muslims want to force this on everybody. They think everybody's supposed to commit suicide for the religion. We don't say that. We teach by example, not by force. That's the big difference. I don't know too much about their lifestyle in general, but I'm just sort of transposing the Jewish thing onto them. If you have a lifestyle which you think is very good and it helps you deal with the problems of the world, so good, so do it, and then teach other people by example. That's what we think. They want to push it down people's throats. That's not true. So, the daughter religions, Christianity and Islam, the daughters of Judaism, like to mimic the mother religion and think that they can do things better. But we are not convinced yet. We have all their, let's say, 1,000 year or whatever attempt at doing it. We're not convinced that they do a better job. Yes?
We have this idea, concept that the world is created from the Torah, so we should be able to find the Torah in nature.
Right. What you're basically saying is that this, call it, order of this nature of Jewish life, of Torah life, is a certain level of nature also. It's, in other words, it does fit into nature. You're saying, like you call it from another salvation. You have to just find where in nature it is, or maybe bring it out. Bring it up out. It's hidden within nature. It's low. It's like on a, it's a subterranean level, and you bring it up to the. It's a way of living. It is a natural. It's an unnatural way of living in terms of a superficial, natural view. But in terms of a deeper natural way of living, it isn't. In a certain way, it's like I would. The Havdol, not to equate at all, but just as a simile. You know, until, 25, 30 years ago, people didn't pay much attention in America to diet. Said, listen, there's food, it tastes good. My father ate everything, so I'll eat everything. That was considered to be the natural thing. Then, 30, 40 years ago, they came up with the idea of natural foods. Get rid of pesticides and think about the diet, and the government made a food pyramid. Eat this, don't do that. Call healthy living, healthy eating. Now that's also, so a lot of people started doing that. And so that's an, there's an, you can eat naturally, means eat whatever you want. You can eat naturally, whatever nature is better for you. It's also natural. Same thing with Torah, not to equate. You can live without the Torah. It's a natural way of living. And then you drown in the physical materialism. Or you can live the Torah way of living. It's also natural, but it's a different kind of natural way. It's healthy for the, just like living, eating natural foods is supposedly, let's grant it for the argument's sake, is healthier. Have lower cholesterol, you'll maybe live longer and you have less diseases. Of course, from a health point of view, it's more natural. Same thing from a spiritual point of view. If you live a Torah life, it'll be a more natural spiritual life. Don't leave a Torah life, then there will be less spiritual because you're living a different kind of natural life. Now, it may be that, of course, without spirituality, that way of living is like the first level. It's the moment you see that way of living right away. It takes some effort to go into the spiritual natural life, but then it becomes a natural life too, which is what you quote from other celebrations and so on, you know. That's what he says. That's a very nice point. So now, what's the idea that God created the world with the letter He? The letter He is the main letter. Now the letter He has a very interesting, all the letters of course have a certain configuration. The letter He, let's say the letter He, this is the letter He. It's a line like that, and a line down, and a hanging line over here. So you have a small space over here.
It used to be connected.
And a very large space over here.
Yeah.
We have it disconnected. Sometimes it used to be connected, and some now it's disconnected. So it's like this. So what does this mean? So he says like this. What it means is, and the world that God created is the natural world. We call that. So if in this natural world is a tremendous empty space on the bottom. In other words, that's where people can fall out. You can fall out of the letter. You can fall out of the world. You can fall into oblivion. It's a big space there. That's if you just follow the regular way of living in the world. Now, however, there's this little hole here on top. It says if a person is able to climb up and go through the hole, you can get out of the trap of nature and get into the supernatural world of the future. Whereas this way falls down, is falling down, let's say, into hell, into oblivion. If you go up, climb up, and go through the hole, there's another hole up here. That hole cuts you into a different reality. That gets you into the world to come, a spiritual world. If you're climbing out of nature into a spiritual world by going through the top exits. That's what he says the symbolism of this letter is. So this is the idea that you have to climb up out of nature to get into the other world. And he says, there's a drash, the rabbis said the following, the Jewish word the Torah uses for creation is Bihi Baram. Bihi Baram. Beis Hei, Beis, Reish, Aleph, Mem. That hay is a small hay.
Behei
Baram.
Behei
Baram. The word with a hay. And then also, you take that hay is small in the Torah, it's like a different size. With that hay you can move around. You take that hay and put it after the Aleph, you get Ba'avraham. If you switch the hay with the Aleph, instead of Behi Baram or Behei Baram, you switch the hay with the Aleph, you get the Avraham. In other words, the world is created with Avraham. What is Avraham? Avraham is the first Jew. He went against nature. Because he was saying that everybody in the world is wrong. They were worshipping idols. And there's one God. And he wasn't afraid that they would kill him. He basically lived an unnatural life. He lived a spiritual life in the world of materialism. Therefore, God rewarded him with an unnatural blessing. That even though many times people tried to kill him, he was able to survive. The children survived, and the Jewish people are alive until today. Just in peace. That's what he said. Yeah.
Moshe Cordovero in Tomei Devora, he also talks about the letter A.
What does he say?
He says that Chazal said, Makom Shabbat Chuba Omid, named Tzadika, where someone who returns to Judaism or whatever, you repent. Where he stands, is in a righteous person from the get-go. He can't reach his level. Can't stand his place. He says it's like the letter A. Because it's someone who's very natural, for natural for him to do good. So for him, to get in, it's very easy. But when he enters, it's always on the bottom. Because it's easy for him. So his reward is going to be less. Someone who kind of goes against his nature, so he has a whole big block, not letting him in. But when he gets in, he gets in.
He starts
at the top. That's good. That's good. Yeah, listen, we do a lot of things. That's why Judaism focuses, really promotes idealism. The idealist is somebody who doesn't want to give in to nature. He wants to change nature. Judaism is a very idealistic system. If we can change, we can change nature outside of us. We can change the nature within us. That's maybe even the greatest goal of Judaism, to change one's personal nature. Not like, see, the Christians, that's too bad that the Christians rejected that. Christians think that person can't really change his nature. Especially at the core, they believe in something like something they call original sin. Every person is born with sin, and there's no way for them to get out of it. Only if he has faith in their God, then that God atones for him. But per se, he's really a sinner. And whatever he does, he will remain a sinner. They're a very pessimistic view of the human capacity to change. I don't believe people can really change. Only a superficial thing, you know, if you say, I believe in their God, but to really change, they don't really accept it. Now, we in Judaism, the Torah itself is very idealistic. It's very, very idealistic. It believes that tshuva, change is always possible. Everybody can change, even in the most basic, essential parts of their personality. They have the ability. They can change. It's very hard. It could be a supernatural challenge, something which is not natural for me to do. Supernatural, but it's doable. That's a very, very big point. That's why Judaism is such an idealistic religion. That anything can change anything. The Jews are always at the forefront in the last couple of centuries when we were finally emancipated from the ghettos. They're at the forefront of all movements of change, including today. always trying to make the world a better place. Believing it can be done. That's believing it can be done. Because whether you're Orthodox or not Orthodox, that's what the Jews say. As the Torah says, the world can change. The world will change, and people will change for the better. Always for the better. And also, if you read these books, Talmud Devorah, and other books like that, you see that there's a very negative reaction towards negativism. It's wrong if someone has a negative personality, he's pessimistic, he's angry, frustrated, depressed, all of these are very bad. From the Torah point of view, these are very bad personality traits. Bad midos. Not supposed to be pessimistic, angry, depressed, frustrated. Supposed to be optimistic, hopeful, happy, positive. So this is all fundamental Jewish personality. Now I don't know if you why. I don't know much about sociology, but they probably do, right? Why is modern man overall depressed, unhappy, frustrated person? There must be a reason. But the Torah doesn't want that. The Torah wants us to be on the other side, not to give in. It's probably because of the materialism that exists nowadays. It's probably because of the way the world is developed, whether it's because people living in big cities. You know, we put a lot of rats together. At that little bit I saw a little science I learned along the way. So they said that if you overcrowd rats, you put them into an environment where there's, so usually they say in a natural way that rats live. So each rat, let's say, has for himself, I don't know, 10 square feet private space. If you crowd the rats together and you give each rat, instead of 10 square feet, only half a foot of space. If he goes a half a foot, he bumps into another rat. So when that happens, you leave them, let them live like that, you give them the regular food, the regular water, everything. Just if they're overcrowded, they go berserk. They go berserk. They go crazy. Start attacking one another, trying to commit suicide, biological crazy. So what's a city? How much is a natural space human being likes to have to feel free, relaxed? I don't know. I know I like to be, I like to have 100 square feet free of people. There's trees, grass, butterflies, I can tolerate. But people, I'd rather see a person on a foot away. Well, once or twice a day, she said hello to me. But meanwhile, living in a city where you bump into a person every 10 seconds, every 3 seconds. So maybe we go crazy because it's against our nature. That's why there's violence in cities and there's temper and what they call this tantrums people have when they're driving cars. Because you're basically overcrowded. It's not natural. The nature is drowning us. But if you're a true Jew, a true trooper, then this shouldn't bother us. Because we should be above nature. Jews should be able to live in overcrowded conditions, which I think certain places that live like that. I don't know, Bauer Park, Williamsburg, you know, maybe
Jerusalem,
maybe Sharon. It's overcrowded, but hopefully if they're following the Torah way of thinking, it doesn't make them angry, depressed, frustrated, crazy. They should be relaxed, they should be happy, they should be full of joy. Because the Torah is supposed to bring us to a level of spirituality which is above nature. It's not a function of natural living on the simple level. It's a spiritual natural living. Right, so it's basically showing. Right, so that's what he says. That's the hay. That's the koch of the hay. The hay means you can fall down. You give in to nature, you climb up, you go against nature. You can escape from nature. That's how he interprets the concept of God created the world with the hay. It's counterintuitive, like most things in Torah, counterintuitive. But after you think about it, it makes a lot of sense.
But is there really such a thing as nature? Because really, everything is a miracle. Like one way of looking at it, like everything is not natural. Because if you think about it a lot.
Okay, that's true.
That's why.
That's maybe a way of escaping the natural flood, which could drown a person, is by denying that nature even exists.
Well, that's why when miracles happen for tzaddikim, for them it doesn't even make it. It's not even a big deal because just things that we take for granted, we think as nature, they look at as a pure miracle. So therefore, what's the difference between this miracle and that miracle? All life is a miracle.
Right. That's correct. That's definitely a way of looking at it. To say everything is God. So there is no nature.
I'm trying to send over. This whole Nasan Loyama 3 times in Tanakh. Everything's supposed to feel like nature. The only thing that's not natural is freedom of choice, free will.
Right.
So
well, what he's saying is for some people, it's one approach. The Shechter, that's another approach. There's a lot of variations within Judaism in this question of how you deal, how you approach nature. I think that what he says, though, that the common denominator of all the different approaches is that we can overcome what the superficial nature which we confront. There's a different level of existence which we can achieve, and that will help us conquer the obstacles of nature. Now, the extreme of that is that you get to the point that you deny that there is a nature out there. There is no nature. That's maybe, you know, it's like that. There was Reb Chanina Gamzu. Gamzu changed water into oil. Was that Reb Chanina Gamzu? Who changed water? Chanina Ben Dosa. Changed vinegar into oil. He needed vinegar. He needed oil to burn. His wife needed oil for the lamp. Oil was too expensive. They could only afford to buy some vinegar. So she said, "You're such a great man. How come you don't have any oil?" So he said, "Take this and put it into the lamp and burn it." So it's vinegar. Vinegar doesn't burn. Vinegar is like water. It puts fires out. So she said, "This doesn't make any sense." He said, "You do it." So she lit it, and it burned like a lamp oil. An oil lamp. She said, "Why?" Because God. He said, "Listen, why does oil burn and vinegar doesn't burn?" Because God said so. There's nothing intrinsic about it. God decided that oil should have rapica, whatever, oxidation, burn, and vinegar won't. So the same source that made oil burn will make vinegar burn. So I asked God, make the vinegar burn. So God made the vinegar burn. So he basically denies that there's such a thing as nature, the Chanina Ben Dosa. But I and you can't do that. If I would put vinegar into my lamp, it would never burn. I'd say that God makes everything burn, it would never, I could never make vinegar burn. So.
Have you tried it yet?
No, but they say, for example, there's one thing which I would like to do, but I don't think I can ever do that either. Also, they say that great righteous people have the merit that they can see the prophet Elijah. Because the prophet Elijah never died. So a great tzaddik, he can see him. He can even have a conversation with him. And many of the great righteous people have recorded conversations that they had with Elijah.
Are there stories that like wait up, stay up all night or something for a bunch of nights in a row?
Well, there's a story about the great rabbi from Belz, the first rabbi of Belz. He stayed up 500 nights, didn't sleep for 500 nights, and the 500 night, the last night, he got to see him. Once he started to see him, so that was it for the rest of his life. He saw him many times, but the first time he saw was he had to wait 500 nights. So. That's the dream I would like to do. I would like to see him, talk to him. But I don't think they'll ever be able to do it. I don't think they're that righteous, that kind of a tzaddik. But to turn vinegar into... But I can imagine that if I would have... I can imagine myself going through a program to eventually get to see and speak to him. I could imagine it. If I would have the right coach, someone to coach me, who did it himself.
Someone to keep you up 500 nights?
That's 500 nights, and fast, and say certain prayers, and live a certain lifestyle. You could probably imagine we could do it. But
is
I don't think we could change.
Time?
I don't think it could change vinegar into oil.
Are there any people still alive who claim to have spoken to him?
Well, alive today?
Yeah. Or is it only in the previous generations?
I heard that Mordechai Eliyahu sees him.
He says something.
He said it.
Did he put it to anybody, or is it just some of the stories?
I don't know. I heard some.
What?
You also heard?
I heard the crazy stories of Mordechai.
Yeah.
Who is he?
He goes up.
He was the Rishon LeZion in Israel. I don't know if he still is.
People say that he can see. He has seen Eliyahu.
Yeah, sure. I went to visit him.
But like normal Hasidic rabbis today, they don't claim to have conversations with Elijah.
Not that I heard of. But the previous rabbis, they did.
How about like Rav Soloveitchik, did he claim
it? Rav Soloveitchik claimed once in a little talk he had with us that he had spoken to his father after his father died. His father came back as to him and spoke to him, appeared to him after his death, and discussed different things with him. He claimed it was real, but I heard he said it. But he never told us that Elijah speak to him.
Well, the Rav was on a very special level. Even when he was a little kid, he used to have conversations with the Rav.
Yeah, but he
right?
He had a different
Rav. imagination.
The Rambam and the great scholars of the Torah that he studied never died. They were always alive.
Wow. Their writing.
So when you read their writings, you're talking to them. That I think is true for a lot of people.
That
the words of the books are so alive that we consider the author alive, even when he may physically not be here, but we consider him alive. He's still alive and talking to us. Yeah.
You said before the idea that you can look as if there is no nature, that everything's a miracle.
Right.
But could you look at it the other way, that God created a system of nature just a set of laws in which he follows, just
right.
the story that God created the Torah and gave it to man, and then God follows that Torah no matter what man does with it. Like, we choose when the Chagim are supposed to be, and God doesn't, and God follows what we choose.
Yeah.
So there's a
that
God follows.
He said, which is the 180-degree other view, that nature is really very real. He even says that miracles
are within nature.
In other words, the Rambam wrote that. The Rambam was one of the believers in natural law, that it's a very real thing. And he says that the supernatural is just an unusual natural event.
Yeah.
He says when God created the world originally, at that point, let's say he made the law of nature, that there's a moon, and the tides and the ocean, and the gravitational pull of the moon makes waters go back and forth, etc., with the tides. So when he created that system of water work, he also built into it that the sea would split when Moshe came and hit it with the stick. And when it split, it's not an unnatural event. It's as natural as gravitational pulls making waves go back and forth. That even the supernatural is part of God's original natural decree. When he created nature, he built into it the supernatural. So that's the other view. Instead of saying that nature is nothing, saying that the supernatural itself is natural. Yeah, that's the other view.
That's also the approach that's within the Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. Says that there's 10 things that God created
in the sixth day,
which basically is the point of that of saying that is like saying it's supernatural, but God stuck it right in the end of his creating a natural process. He stuck it in so that it would still be part of nature,
right?
Yeah. Exactly how Rosh said.
Exactly. That's exactly what the Rambam writes. There's a very interesting problem in halacha because of this. So is the issue being, is the supernatural natural, or is it something not natural? So where does it come out as a halachic issue? The Gemara has an issue like this.
About davening. If you're allowed to daven for a miracle?
I wasn't thinking of that. Maybe we'll explain that in a minute. I was thinking of this. The Gemara has a question. There's a rule that one of the sacrifices that people can bring in the temple is they can offer God a gift of flour. And you take it and burn on the altar, and that's the gift, that's the sacrifice. So the Gemara says, what happens if flour comes from wheat, which didn't grow in the ground, the wheat grew in a cloud? That's a supernatural event, wheat growing in a cloud. Nowadays you would say wheat was grown in a test tube from DNA.
Hydroponics.
Hydroponics is. So it grows in a cloud, which is a supernatural thing. So is that good or not good? In other words, is that real wheat or is that something else? It's a supernatural product which looks like wheat and tastes like wheat. Is it really wheat or is it something else? Or is how do you define the supernatural as part of nature or something outside nature? That's a halakhic question. And the philosophic issue is the Rambam says that all supernatural events were built into nature when God created nature. He created the supernatural. And what Avraham quotes from other Jewish thinkers is the reverse, that everything natural is really supernatural. The most good thing is nature. Everything is God's will. Yes?
Also, I was going to say, is it also the same thing that golem can be counted for a minute?
Yeah, same question. Right. In other words, if there's an artificial man who was created, like the story of the Maharal created the golem. This is an artificial, it's basically, it would be like nowadays, a robot. If you can, that's another few generations of robots. They may get to the point that robots will be able to make decisions.
Or you can have cloning.
Cloning.
Like clone sheep via sacrifice.
Right. The question is it real or is it a supernatural thing? It's an imaginary mirage. It's not a real thing. Yeah, in other words, science today is getting to the point that it's producing things which are
supernatural
a long time ago. A cloning means from a tiny cell which you don't even see, it's under a microscope, you can produce a whole sheep. Or the way robotics is developing, before long you'll have a robot, you can talk to it. Tell it clean my house for me, we'll go clean my house. Now go wash the dishes. We'll go wash the dishes. It's not far away.
You already have one of those, for the dishwasher. Say, wash my dishes anytime.
You can talk to it today. Yeah, I'm saying that it's getting to the point that you can talk to the machines and give them orders. You don't have to push the button. They recognize voice. So at some point, it's already been written about, by the way, in the Halachic Torah journals. It's a discussion. Is at any point you ever get to the point that this now is considered a humanoid? And maybe now we should count them to a minion, to the 10 people for davening, or we should put on tefillin. Anyway, these are practical applications of this very abstract question of how do you relate the natural to the supernatural. But what he says here is that Judaism promotes supernatural living. Regular natural living is going to destroy spirituality. You have to be able to go against nature. Okay, anyway, let's hope that we can achieve this in various things that we have to face all the time and do the right things. Go ahead.
Whatever you want. This is a new thing. Yes. Mm. Chance.